What did you do today?
Well, in this episode, you're going to hear some interviews with our kids, and our seven-year-old just finished and published his first book. And today I got it up available for sale.
Oh, that's fantastic. It is the cutest book ever.
I'm pretty stoked. This kid spent so much. He spent months writing that in Google Docs. He kind of learned how to type. He learned how to use Google Docs. He learned how to use image search just by writing this book. Like, he taught himself because he had the motivation to do it.
Yeah, I had so much fun interviewing him about it. And we'll play the interview here in a couple minutes on the first part of the episode. But the first thing that I asked him is like, why did you decide to write this book? And he said he was just so inspired by turtles. And the book is, of course, about turtles.
Yep. It's at myturtlebook.com. And it is a 24-page full-color book. It's only $8 plus a little bit of shipping. So we hope you'll check it out and support the kid. He's actually saving up all of the proceeds from this, and he wants to buy the Lego Death Star. It's the biggest purchase he or his brother will have ever made, because I think it's $400. And I'm pretty proud of him as a seven-year-old, you know, thinking that big and having a goal like that.
Yeah, and pretty much we said, go out there and earn some money, kid, because your allowance probably isn't going to cut it. Mm-hmm. If you need big cash, you have to do something big. And so writing a book for him is his double down entrepreneurial venture to get this Death Star.
That's right. And he had seen his brother, if you recall, if you've listened to this podcast for a while, you know, his brother wrote a book called A Parent's Guide to Minecraft, and you can actually still buy that book too. You could buy it. I think it's $5 for PDF or $10 for the print. And it's, if you go to finstravels.com, there's a link in the upper right, and it'll take you to a Gumroad page where you can check it out. If nothing else, it's interesting. I actually learned a lot, and parents who buy it find that they understand what their kids do just a little more. But he wrote that when he was 8, and he made a few hundred dollars from it, enough that his little brother was pretty jealous.
It's been really great for us to watch our kids kind of take a cue from mom and dad and see that if you want to do something very interesting, or in their case, if you want to buy something big or significant, that writing a book is not a bad way to go. And that using your interests and your, you know, your intellectual ability to put together words and images into a narrative that's informational and helpful to other people is a pretty valuable way to spend time, even when you are a little kid.
Yeah. And multiple times I've told the kids, that's just what we do in this family. We write books.
So in today's episode, we have interviews with both our boys. We, of course, as many of you know, have a little girl now as well. And she is also writing her own little book, but not quite ready to publish yet. So we have interviews with both of the kids that have published books, and then interview with a friend who is really thoughtful about how to help kids love writing. Because I think as we have reflected on our experience as professionals, not even entrepreneurs, but just as human beings, one of the skills that has been incredibly important to both Rob and I is our ability to write reasonably well. That's kind of this secret superpower, I think, of entrepreneurs, that it's great if you can code well, it's great if you can, you know, design well, it's great if you're a bright psychologist, but if you don't have really good mechanisms to communicate about what you do and what you love, then it's really a difference between riding a rocket ship and just carving out a nice little niche for yourself and having a great career. But I think writing is one of those things that is a big differentiator between successful entrepreneurs and people who have a very nice life, but maybe aren't as successful as they might otherwise be. So our focus today is on how to raise writers.
Let's dive in.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families. This is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Founder. Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
tell me about the book that you just wrote.
It's all about turtles. I just was inspired by these amazing creatures, and they are known for their hard shells, and turtles are one of my favorite animals, so I just wrote a book about them.
What about writing a book sounded like a good idea? Because, of course, you can love turtles, and you have a turtle as a pet, you think about turtles, but what made you want to write about turtles?
I just wanted to write a book to, like, make some money, and I kind of wanted to write with a simple start, so, like, my favorite animal, so I could write about that and then make some money.
Was it hard to write a book?
It wasn't too hard. It was actually kind of fun, but it was a little difficult, but it wasn't very hard.
How long did it take you?
About 3 months.
Was there a time when you felt discouraged?
No, not really. No.
Okay. And what's your favorite part of your book? Is there a chapter that you're particularly proud of?
There aren't really chapters, by the way. I kind of like the whole book. I don't really have, like, a favorite section, but...
How are sales going so far?
A lot better than I thought. We've sold 4 books so far, and we have $33.
And you've been at it for, like, an hour?
Probably less than that, but yeah, less. Like 30 minutes or something.
How do you talk to people about your book?
Like I say, hello, I just finished writing a book, and I was just going around the neighborhood wondering if people wanted to buy a copy of it, and then they just buy it.
Is it easier to make money that way than doing chores or other things that are usually open to kids?
I like writing books more because, like, it's fun to write them, and also it's good practice for, like, being a salesman. And, like, plus you get a lot of money for books.
Yeah, what are you going to do with your money?
I was saving up for... I'm just kind of saving up. I don't really have a particular goal yet, but I'm just saving up because money is useful.
You have talked in the past about wanting to be someone who's really good with money. Why is it important to you to be good with money?
Because money is an important thing.
What makes someone good at money or not good at money?
Well, I'm really skilled and good at counting money and adding the amounts up. I count my bank maybe every week. I see how it has improved. But some people aren't very good with money. Like, some people at my school, we do, like, money bingo or something, and they take forever to count up the amounts of money.
So you have some excellent skills in counting money and keeping track of money.
Yeah, I'm also good at spending money. I almost never break a particular goal, but it is really hard to, like, it's really easy to break your goal.
It's hard to save for a long time,
yeah,
isn't it?
I'm really good at saving.
What's the last thing you saved for? Is it the Minecraft Lego village?
Yes.
How much did that cost?
My brother helped me a little bit. It cost... Well, we got it cheap. We got it for, like, $160, but the original thing cost $200.
So you had to save for a long time, and then you had,
yeah,
to find a deal, wait around for a deal.
Yep.
What's your next book going to be about?
Dinosaurs.
Okay. And when can we expect that publication?
Probably in a few months. It takes a long time to write.
It takes a while to write a good book, doesn't it? Well, congratulations, Fish age 7, on finishing your first book and making your first sales here today. Does it feel good to be a published author who's actually sold a book?
Yeah.
Yeah. How are you going to sell the rest of your books?
Probably the last way. It's actually the way we did it last time. It's actually kind of fun, but I might put it on Amazon or something.
Well, great. I'm sure our listeners will look forward to more books from you in the future. Thanks for joining me on Zen Founder today.
Okay. Bye.
So, Finn, you've spent a chunk of this afternoon helping your brother walk around the neighborhood and sell his book. How does it feel to be supporting him as an entrepreneur?
I like to be supportive, and I try to help him as much as I can. After all, he's my brother. But I also am a little envious that he made $33 in one go.
Yeah.
And he didn't give me any of it, so I'm a tiny bit upset over that.
What do you feel like would be a fair share for you as his neighborhood escort?
Oh, 10%.
So you wrote and sold a book a couple years ago, The Parent's Guide to Minecraft.
Yeah.
How did your book sell?
Pretty good.
How many did you sell in total? Do you know the full total?
A lot.
A lot. Like more than 50.
I think I made around $200.
Okay. After you paid back your initial investors.
Yeah.
And who were your initial investors in this situation?
Dad.
And?
It was several years ago. I don't really remember, but I remember it was Dada and you, I'm pretty
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, Mom and Dad were your investors. And why did you need investors to get started in your journey as an entrepreneur?
Well, I didn't know how to get it up in, like, the fancy plastic cover. The best I could do was staple the pages together and go around trying to sell the booklet. Dada basically went online and self-published it, and he also he also went on Gumroad and did that. I wouldn't have known how to do that without his help, so I'm grateful to him.
So you needed some expertise.
Yeah.
And you also needed some upfront capital, didn't you?
Yeah.
What is capital?
Basically money.
Money. You need some money.
Funds.
What did you need money for?
Seed money.
Yeah. To get you started, right? To pay for printing.
Yeah, and I'm actually working on volume 2 and I'm trying to get that published, so everybody look out for Parents Guide to Minecraft Volume 2.
Why did you decide to write A Parents Guide to Minecraft?
I just really like Minecraft, and I feel like a lot of grown-ups know shockingly little about the game.
That's true. What will you add to your second version?
Well, first of all, there have been a lot of updates since the first version, so I'm adding a bunch of the new features. I'm also adding a new chapter that describes all the tool materials and ores and the crafting recipes to get, like, tools and stuff. And also, there were a few, actually, errors in my thing, so I'm changing that.
Okay.
I'm also adding a new chapter called Basic Controls.
Have you done any market research or talked to any parents about what their questions or concerns are about Minecraft?
Actually, no.
I wonder if that might be helpful as you think about what information parents are most in need of.
Yeah.
There might be some parents who are interested in, like, the player-to-player component of Minecraft and thinking about how to help their children make good decisions online and maybe stay safe from creepy people on Minecraft.
Yeah. I haven't talked about any of, like, the signing up or logging in stuff. Like, it's mostly about Pocket Edition where you don't need an account.
Ah, I see.
But I do include some stuff about computer.
I wonder if that... You might want to survey some parents, see what they want to know. So what do you like about being an author?
I just like the creation.
Has it been hard for you to sit down and write?
Sometimes I get, like, writer's block.
What do you do when you get writer's
block? I usually, like, take a break and come back to it later, maybe do some art, listen to music, like inspirational music.
What kind of music inspires you when you're trying to get ready to write?
I like Imagine Dragons. It feels, like, epic to me.
Sort of
and I
uplifting.
Like to create epic stories.
Do you imagine yourself continuing to write on into adulthood and through adulthood?
Yeah.
What about writing do you think is important, or what makes it something that you'd like to keep doing?
The creating.
The creative process.
Said that.
Yeah. That's okay. That's a really good answer.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on your success as an author so far, and I am personally looking forward to the second edition of A Parent's Guide to Minecraft. Any other books in the pipeline for you? Any other topics you're thinking about?
Well, I'm planning on expanding the Parent's Guide to Minecraft thing. Like, there are more dimensions in Minecraft called the Nether and the End, and I'm planning to make A Parent's Guide to the Nether and the End.
Maybe you could write, like, A Parent's Guide to Raising a Cool Kid.
I think I'll stick to video games.
It's stick to what you know. All right. Well, thank you for joining me on this episode of Zen Founder.
Thanks for hosting me.
Oldest one, she's 12 now, and she has loved writing from the moment she could hold a crayon or a pencil or a pen. We started getting her journals when she was really little. Like, we've traveled a lot with our kids, and she would draw pictures and write words of everything that she saw and did. So for her, writing just is like a part of who she is, and she's very good at talking, and her vocabulary was huge at 18 months, and she's always wanted to tell us everything and understand lyrics, and she just is a word girl. So getting her to write was not hard, but she really liked writing fiction, which I think a lot of kids start there. So she wanted to write about characters. She wanted to write extensions of books that she'd read. So encouraging her started in first grade when she entered her first writing contest, and she won, which was a great motivator for her.
Absolutely.
But the challenge for her was moving out of the fictional writing and into academic writing, because academic writing is more boring.
Sure. And it's less open-ended. You have to kind of follow certain structures. You have to write in a certain way. You have to even structure your paragraphs in a way that kind of consistently agreed upon, or you're instructed from an outside force. So right. You're homeschooling. So you're a primary teacher, but I know you have some other mm-hmm. adults that are also helping to support your kids as they're learning.
Right. So I knew I can write and Chris can write, but I needed outside help for her. And we put her in a class at our charter school that we go to, which is mainly homeschooling, but they still were not meeting her needs. And so I found another woman who teaches something called IEW, which is Institute in Excellence in Writing. And it starts very formulaic on how to write a good paragraph, or a good 3 paragraphs, and then eventually 5. And now Emily's working on a 12 paragraph essay at 12. But it teaches you grammar, it teaches you interesting openings, it teaches you the structure of a good paragraph and vocabulary to support. So that's been excellent for her, and they advanced her very quickly. So now at 12, she's in with all the high schoolers, and they are writing large essays, they're doing critiques, they're doing now public speaking, because if you're writing, you want to communicate, and then you want to also be able to say it out loud in a way that makes sense.
I love how you describe the process of how writing fits into this larger experience of communicating. Mm-hmm. And to be able to think through something, then form it into the written word, and then to be able to talk about it or to argue it. Mm-hmm. And it's this really, I think, important process in learning how to think and organize your thoughts, which, you know, can be super challenging for kids, but also is that big differentiator between someone who is a smart, achievement-oriented person and someone who can go that extra step in really getting their ideas out there into the world.
Right. And for Emily, for a long time, she just wanted to be a fiction writer. That's what she wanted to do, was write books. And Chris and I believe firmly that our kids get to choose what they want to be and what they want to do, but we also feel like we need to kind of guide a little bit. And I believe that Emily has a lot in her and could do a lot of things. So we've encouraged her to really hone in on her writing and her communication skills, because she can use that in any field. If you're a lawyer, if you're a psychologist, if you're an entrepreneur, you need to be able to communicate well, and in written form and in spoken. So she knows that writers don't make a lot of money, but she's talked about going into politics. She's talked about being a lawyer and an advocate for those who can't speak for themselves. And so her writing skills will just help her in that.
Yeah, it's hard to think of a vocational field where writing isn't a very useful skill. Right. So your other child has not had this early on natural love of writing.
Right.
What's that been like, and how have you helped support him learning these skills?
Yeah, our second child is Christian. He's a boy, and he's only 22 months younger than his sister. And I've always felt like he kind of fell under her shadow. And you know how there are toddlers who don't talk for a while because everybody's talking for them. And I just assumed Christian didn't spell well because Emily was always there to help him spell everything. And I was a public school teacher teaching first grade. I have a master's in reading and literacy. And I just assumed he just wasn't motivated to learn all the phonics of things. And he just was kind of lazy. That's what I assumed was a character flaw in my son. And that he didn't care to keep a tidy handwriting. He just was kind of messy. Chris and I happened to go on an extended trip and our kids stayed with some friends and he had to do this excellence in writing class without me. And I didn't realize how much I was facilitating his writing. I was helping him a lot. But without me there, he was on his own. And this teacher said to me, "Have you thought of stealth dyslexia for Christian?" And it rocked my world. And I'm like, I don't even know what that is. I know what dyslexia is, but I don't know
what's the stealth thing
dyslexia is. And so I started reading about it. And the more I read about it, I thought, oh yeah, this seems like Christian. This seems like it fits the bill. And so then we had him tested and it didn't turn out to be regular dyslexia. He has dysgraphia, which is specifically with writing. Mm-hmm. And Christian and I went through a period of kind of mourning that because he knows, he's fully aware that his dad is a great writer and public speaker. His sister is a great writer and public speaker. And I think he just assumes that I'm a great writer. He's never seen me public speak, but he felt like the ugly duckling of the family. Like he's the one who doesn't have the family skill. Hmm. And the truth is he does. He's full of stories. He's full of ideas. He wants to get them out. He just doesn't have the skills to be able to do it well at this point.
The mechanics of forming letters on paper is the barrier at this point, not the lack of ideas or the lack of thoughts.
He has great ideas. In fact, I can look back now and see indicators that he had this where he was in a writing class at our school. And I happened to see his teacher out and about and she's like, "Christian has such great ideas. I've now put him on voice to text because then he can get his stories out." And in my head, I'm like, no, he needs to learn how to write those words. He needs to spell and get the grammar down. And she didn't have the skills to help him overcome that, but she recognized that he had a lot to say. Now that we know, the school is giving him 2 hours extra help a week with spelling specifically for someone who has some trouble with phonics. And I've taught him how to use voice to text. He's learning how to type, which goes much faster for him. He doesn't have to write as much. So for his process in writing, he always handwrites his outline and then he types or voice to text his rough draft. And in this program that we're in, it's very clear that your first draft is not your last draft, mm-hmm. that you have to edit and revise. And so he will revise now almost completely on his own. And he knows how to do all of that. And then my job, which is the job I was supposed to have all along, is the editor at the end. Because voice to text is tough because every time you make a mistake and fix it, it automatically puts in a capital letter.
Oh, so, interesting. Okay.
Yes. I have to go back in and make sure all of his capitals are appropriately placed, yeah. ending marks. And he's getting better at saying period. And then it puts in the period for him. So he's adapting and learning and feels this freedom that he's never felt before. And he can knock out a 3-paragraph essay fairly quickly now. And he knows, okay, mom, it's your part. And he's not feeling as bad about not being able to spell. And we've told him many times now, of all of the troubles to have, not knowing how to spell has the most tools available to you. Mm-hmm. Our sweet boy, when he was in the depths of it, before we even knew, he said, "I'm just going to be a chef because chefs just cook and that I can do that." And my husband, Chris, was like, "Well, a really good chef has to write a cookbook." And Christian was like, Oh no. Then I'll just be like a cook at Taco Bell. I could do that job and not have to write. And I just felt like, no, I don't want this to limit him.
Yeah.
And so we've found alternate ways for him. And we've talked about testing is hard for him. Timed tests, like an PSAT or an SAT at some point will be difficult for him.
Yeah.
But there are alternate ways to go to college. You can go to 2 years of junior college and never take the SAT. And then transfer into a 4-year college. And so my goal for Christian is for him to realize there's anything that he wants to do, he could do it. And that he just has the he has to develop the wherewithal within himself to seek help and be tenacious.
I think one of the things that I really like about the writing process for kids is it's such a great exercise in that growth mindset. Mm-hmm. You know, the first thing that you get down, it's just the starting point. Like, there's all manner of time to like draft it and change the words and change the order and add some different language. And it's such a, I think, really, really practical experience for kids to be able to see, like, this is where I started and this is where I ended up two drafts later.
Right.
And so thinking about even Christian's experience of having that lesson learned over and over again in this really, you know, sort of small, mundane kids in school kind of way, mm-hmm. but it's such a deep value for him to practice. And I know that you'll instill that in him as he's doing that over time.
He loves to print out his first draft, his roughest draft, and then compare it to his final draft. And he has to turn them in anyway together. But he is always like, wait, Mom, I have to make my rough draft. And then he'll print that out first because I think he likes seeing that process.
I mean, you as a family, the Lemma family, as you said, lots of superpowers of writing within your family. But are there things that you've done kind of in your family culture or things that you just do together that seem to support this love of writing or support your children becoming competent, interested writers?
Chris is a prolific blogger. There have been different times that we've started blogs. Emily, she kind of goes back and forth with her blogging, but she enjoys it. But she's always really enjoyed that. But there was a challenge that Chris made for us for, I think it was 30 days. And all of us had our own blog. And Christian really loved that too. And he was writing maybe a sentence or two. So that kind of thing, being able to publicly speak has also been important. And so like at a family dinner, Christian is usually the first one to say, can we do table topics? And so we come up with these open-ended questions and all of us have to answer them. We've also done family debates where we have to take one side or the other, and we do that at a dinner as well.
Have you put as much emphasis on coding skills as you have on writing skills?
Not as much. I know Christian is way more interested in coding. He takes all the coding classes at school. At 10, he will finish it this year. Like, he could take coding 2 again, but he's not going to learn anything more. In fact, I talked to the coding teacher and I said, are you going to teach this language? And he said, if I knew that language, I'd be working in a company. I wouldn't be teaching kids.
Oh,
and I'm like,
brave.
Okay. He said, your husband would probably do better. And so I know Chris has a plan for Christian because he has an interest in it. Mm-hmm. And he's done some little things already with logic. Emily doesn't really have a huge desire for that. And so we're not forcing her to do that. So we're kind of going with their lead rather than our prescribed path.
Yeah, that doesn't feel as essential of a sort of hardcore skill that right. writing does at this point.
Right.
Yeah, some people are kind of arguing that that will change and it will be interesting to see if it does. Mm-hmm. But I think regardless of whether coding becomes kind of a core primary topic in children's education, I think writing isn't going anywhere.
Right. We have both of our kids in music classes because the way your brain works with playing music and reading the code off the sheet is similar. And if you can develop those logical, mathematical things in a creative way, then it kind of utilizes the whole brain. So we have done that.
Yeah, it's all this great way of helping kids learn how to think, whether right. that's creative thinking or analytical thinking or structuring your thoughts in such a way that you can communicate them well to other people or translating, you know, music from one sensory input to another sensory input, you know, seeing right. the music on the sheet and then being able to hear it and play it. Those are just ways that we're supporting those kids and their brains.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other things you'd like to comment on about writing and your experience as a family raising young writers?
Yeah. I think it's important. And I think having two very different kids has shown me as an educator myself that there isn't an excuse not to learn how to write and how to communicate. That really is a good focus. And I worry because as an educator, I've watched education and how it changes. And I don't know that teachers are being taught really effective ways to teach kids how to write. I feel like it's the one that kind of falls through the cracks the most, which is scary.
Yeah, it has some pretty big implications for lots of things. Mm-hmm. How well kids are, of course, able to articulate their thoughts and feelings, how well they're able to go through that iterative process of a draft and a revision and a revision and a final draft. I mean, there's lots of like skills that are important in the writing process that maybe don't even have to do with that essay as a final outcome.
Yeah.
So yeah, I share your concern. Well, thanks for talking to me.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.